Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart podcast, where healthcare meets business, with your host, me, Dr. Karen Litzy. And just as a reminder, the information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and is not to be used as personalized medical advice. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody, this is your host, Dr. Karen Litzy. And before we get to today's episode, I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to our sponsor, Jane. If you're not familiar with Jane, they are a clinic management software and EMR. I have been using them for many years, and I know on the podcast, I talk often about what I like best about Jane, so I'm going to talk about something else I like about Jane, and that is their scheduling. So you do all your scheduling within the app, and one feature that they have is you can schedule your patient for the same time on the same day every week, so you can schedule out that full plan of care if you know the patient wants a dedicated time each week with the click of a button. So you don't have to go to each individual date and put the time in, just one click, and it'll populate for as long or as short as you want, as long as that patient wants the same time and day every week. So that's my big tip on today's podcast for using Jane. Now, whether you're starting to do your research or you've been contemplating switching your software for a while, Jane understands the process can be intimidating. I get it as well. That's why their goal is to provide you with all the onboarding resources you need to make the switch as smooth as possible. They offer a personalized call to set up your account, a free data import, and a variety of online resources to get you up and running quickly. And if you need a helping hand along the way, you have access to unlimited phone, email, and chat support included in your Jane subscription. If you're interested in learning more, book a one-on-one demo at jane.app/switch. And if you decide to make the switch, don't forget to use the code Litzy. 1MO, that's LITZY, the number one, MO at sign up and receive a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. Whatever platform you're listening right now, go to the show notes and one click will take you to all of that info on Jane. So big thank you to Jane and thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart podcast. I am your host, Dr. Karen Litzy. And today I am joined by a repeat guest, Dr. Emily Sherb. She is a physical therapist specializing in circus and performing arts medicine. She's also known as the Circus Doc on Instagram. Through her over 30 years of training and working in the circus arts, she has gained deep insight into how circus bodies work in the air and on the ground. Emily shares that knowledge through clinical work, research, and teaching courses for instructors and healthcare providers with the mission of improving health and safety in circus training and performance. So, Emily, welcome back to the podcast. I'm happy to have you back.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here and get to talk to you again.
Yes, and we get to talk again about circus. And just as a refresher, so last time, people can go back and listen to the last one, but we did talk about what circus is. But can you give the listeners a refresh as to what, when people say, I work with circus performers, what does that mean and what does that encompass?
Well, I'm really lucky getting to work with circus performers in that it's kind of like saying I'm a physical therapist. There's so many different things that I get to do. So I get to work with jugglers. I get to work with hand balancers. I get to work with trapeze artists, wire walkers, dance movement. There's circus in kind of every aspect of movement from the ground to the air. Some circus companies also have musicians. Some have actors. So it really can be almost any performing art form. But traditionally, when people say circus, what they're meaning is pushing the body to its extremes and challenging its movements. And when I think of circus, I do think of that, but I expand it a little further out. It's not about all human limits, it's within the individual's limits. So that may mean my recreational artists after work are pushing their bodies to their limits to make gains in their fitness and social connections. And my performing artists that are professionals may be pushing their bodies to the limits to get that contract, to get that new skill that's going to help them achieve their goals. So I think of circus as really working with the body to test those limits in a safe environment.
And So I think a lot of people, when they think of circus, they think of more the professional end, you know, kind of the, like you said, the wire walkers, the trapeze artists, things like that. But you had just mentioned, well, they're those people who maybe take classes after work. So what are we talking about there?
Yeah, it's expanded so much. So there's still the traditional circus classes where you go to a circus school and you take classes in trampoline. You take classes in aerial silks. That's probably one of the most common ones. And then there's kind of circus that's come into other aspects of our recreational fitness. Acro yoga. So partner acrobatics, doing things with a partner, laying on the ground and moving around. Aerial yoga. Yoga has taken on a lot of circus.
Yeah.
Aerial yoga. Pole dancing has gotten massively huge as a recreational fitness form. All of these have found their way kind of into more and more of our active lifestyles. And they really do capture a different adult mover than some of our other fitness activities. You know, we think of the dance world, you know, and by life, everything's performing arts. So the dance world, you have a lot of dancers. And as you hit your teen years, as you go to college, as you hit your 20s, most people stop dancing. And some of those athletes don't find another sport or activity. And circus is kind of there. And it's this new thing that they can latch onto. Or because circus is so novel and everyone gets to learn it once together, it's often an activity that newer movers can latch onto. And it's highly adaptable. So things like aerial yoga or hammocks or sling, those are all kind of using the same stretchy fabric, stretch into a U shape with the ends anchored to the ceiling, and it hangs like a hammock. And they can use that to support body weight while moving in air and space. And as a physical therapist, I love it because they're supporting their body weight with some help from the apparatus, but they're learning to lift and hold their body weight. They're challenging their proprioception, moving in space in new axes. And they're building a love of movement and a, kind of positive feedback with movement, which is really empowering for a lot of adult movers to do for the first time.
And is there, do you reach an age where it's just not for you anymore?
Oh my gosh. What a great question. I'm so excited about this question. I get this question even from circus artists, like on the recreational side, professional side, all of it. And no, the answer is no. It is one, it's completely adaptable. Like I said, there are standard movement vocabularies, but even those, it's an art form. If you can find a way to hang from something, you're doing aerial. So if you're sitting in the hammock and you can sit and balance, you're an aerialist. If you're hanging from your arms, one arm, two pinkies, your teeth, whatever, you're also an aerialist. Actually, this week, thank you for letting me shout it out. This week is a show here in Seattle where I live called Silver Foxes. And you have to be
cute.
Over 45 to even audition to perform. And every year they threaten to make the threshold higher because there's too many performers, right? So we have this great group of performers that are well into their 50s, their 60s, still performing beautifully, or have picked it up later in life, which is absolutely incredible. And that's kind of the recreational, but advanced recreational. They are performing, and honestly, it's my favorite show to watch. I mean, I love beautiful young people learning and strong and doing their thing, but there's something about a 60-year-old performer, even if they weren't a performer their whole life, they don't have the same inhibitions. They have different self-judgment, right? We all have self-judgment, but it's very, very different. And it's a lot more playful. It's a lot more fun. There's a lot of really positive, warm energy. So I love my older performers. I think they're absolutely the best. But on the professional side of things, there's also older performers on the professional side. As we go more to our shows that are not touring. So most of us, when we think of circus, we'll probably still have that
under the big top.
Big top, right?
Yeah.
Like big top, sawdust, which is not as common in the circus world anymore. And instead we have a lot more resident shows. And these resident shows allow performers to be older. Maybe they have families, maybe they have kids. if they have an association with a company, they often can evolve their act or their character work to kind of take them on through a longer career. Here in Seattle, and that's where I'm based, and we have a great, really vibrant circus community here, which is one of the reasons I'm here. But it's also that why I like to talk about it. We have a show, a dinner theater show called Teatro Zanzani. They also have a show in Chicago. And their show, I think it was 2 years ago, I think every one of their circus performers, except for maybe one of them, was over 40. All, so these are all the professional
All
ones
professional,
performing,
yeah.
all professional, all over 40. Right now, their cast, gosh, I think their oldest is in his late 60s.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then they have young people in their 20s performing as
Sure,
well.
sure.
So there's, but it's not like you don't go to the show and think, wow, those performers are old.
Well, over 40 is not that old.
No, but for a professional performer in the performing arts, professional athlete, that's really what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
Right?
definitely.
There is longevity because of the adaptability and because it is a performing art where you really do get to show a different aspect of that performance as you get older, and you get to really relish in the performance aspect and make things bigger and bolder. It's not always about the hardest skill, it's about doing it with intention and doing it really, really well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, not everybody has to be Pink, right? I went last summer, I went to see Pink, and that is like the epitome of circus. But and she's over 40, and just it's outrageous how good
Yes.
she is. And how precise she is, and how strong she is, and all the performers around her. I mean, she puts on an amazing show. But to your point, she's on the silk, she's hanging from things, she's spinning, she flies around the whole stadium. I mean, it's
And
all,
she's singing.
and she's singing at the same time. I know, it's unbelievable. So I can't, I think when I was watching her, I felt my anxiety going up, like, oh my God, how is she doing this? There's not a net under there. How is this possible? What if she falls? Like, and so I think if I were a person taking one of these classes, you know, regular Joe sort of taking one of these classes, that would be in my head the whole entire time is, oh my God, what if I fall? What if I do this? So do you have any advice for people who are have maybe seen these aerial yoga classes or, you know, working with the silks and are like, oh, that's not for me because what if I fall or I'm not that strong or I'm not that flexible?
Absolutely. Yeah, my advice is do it. And the reason I say that, this is backed by science. The reason I say it is because what we find is that folks that do circus increase their resilience. They increase their self-efficacy. They increase their ability to have confidence in their body and in movement. And so circus isn't about jumping in and doing something at 50 feet up in the air the first day, unless you're flying trapeze. That's a different There comes with safety lines and a whole different scenario, but you're getting in and you're starting from the ground and working up in the air, or you're starting with a partner on the ground and figuring out how to collaborate and work with teamwork and building trust. But it's building trust with your partner, it's building trust with yourself, it's building trust in movement that really increases that awareness and that knowledge in your own body of what you're capable of, and it increases your balance and your core strength, and it does all of that for you. So if you're afraid, it's actually a great reason to try it. Bring a friend. But it's a good reason to try an intro level class because you will be less afraid by the end of it. Like you will actually
And that's a
learn to
win.
grow. And that's a win. That's a win. That's what it's about. That's, not most of us aren't going to go in our adult years and join Cirque du Soleil or run off with Ringling Brothers. But we are going to learn a new skill.
Which
And
is
as
fun.
adults, we do that so rarely. When's the last time you learned a new movement skill? It doesn't happen that often.
No, it does not. No, it does not.
And you're
Outside of like, I'm going to take tennis lessons. You know what I mean?
right. And even that, it's
And
still
even
more
that,
familiar. It's still more familiar. So there's a lot of really good that comes with taking a really controlled risk, right? It's a, it, It is a risk,
right.
of course.
Right.
It's a really
right.
controlled risk.
Yeah. Yeah. You can control some of that. And now in the beginning, you were saying how your view of circus is people kind of pushing their bodies to certain limits and through certain ranges of motion. But what happens if you don't have that full range of motion, or you don't have the strength through the full range of motion?
It gets a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
Is the simple answer. It's not nobody, but most people, kids or adults, don't walk into a circus class with that range of strength through their full range of motion, because most
right.
of us function in a world that's built for us, right? Everything's in front of us,
mm-hmm.
our phones, our computers, driving to work, for you, tapping onto the subway, right? Like everything is right in front of us. And this is one of those times where we're really challenging that range of motion. And so it's a little different being a circus artist. But, you know, as folks are learning and coming up, ideally they have a coach that they're working with, and that coach gets to help them gradually increase that range of motion so they can start doing things that involve being on their hands and knees and then going into something like a downward dog before maybe doing a handstand for the first time.
Right.
You know, sitting in the hammock before hanging from the silks, and kind of taking load into their feet before they learn to take load in their arms, because we're not as good at that generally as movers. We're very
Right.
good at running and jumping, but hanging from our arms is really novel and requires a lot of strength and range that not everybody has. But you asked what can happen. I mean, like, well, worst case scenario is the body is being pushed beyond its actual limits, and we can run into overload or overuse issues.
Injuries.
Not overuse, but an uneven match of stress and tissue capacity, right? So relative overuse. So we end up with injuries, which is where clinicians get to come in.
Right. That's where the people who are listening who are clinicians can think about when they're evaluating someone who's coming in. Let's say they said, I've been taking recreation like yoga, aerial yoga, or pole dancing or something like that. It's in your opinion, is it important for them to not just do, oh, let's see what your range of motion is at 90 degrees, or let's see what your strength is at 90 degrees, but to really work through the whole range? And if so, how can we do that with specificity?
Yeah, so yeah, it is so important for us to look at the full range of motion. So I like checking strength, and I like looking at how they're doing their muscle test. So if you're doing a manual muscle test, it's not just push on it, how good are you at holding it, but what are you actually using to do that movement?
Mm-hmm.
So like, yes, you can hold it there, but I see when I'm pushing on your arm, checking your middle trapezius, that you're actually using your posterior deltoid a heck of a lot more. You know, so being really specific with our eyes, in addition to just kind of running through and looking at end range, because there is a difference between normal and circus normal. We have circus normal. We want that strength through the full range, especially at end range, which is really, really hard for us to do. We have that length tension relationship of our muscles. We like to activate, and we do a better job activating our muscles in mid range. End range is a heck of a lot harder. Something as simple for a recreational artist as looking at end range shoulder flexion and how they're achieving that end range shoulder flexion can be really telling. If you have an artist who's doing pole dance and needs to get their arm up over their head, or aerial and needs to get their arm up over their head, or handstands and needs to get their arm up over their head, and they're stuck at 160, something's going to give, whether it's the glenohumeral joint or it's going to be more stress in the low back. Something is going to have to make up that range of motion difference when gravity is pulling down on the other end. And so do they have the motor control to be there? And once they're there, do they have the strength to maintain it and to move out in and out of that position?
And do you ever use things like handheld dynamometers or the Tyndek or anything like that to judge that strength in different ranges?
Yeah, I do occasionally use a handheld dynamometer or actually a sphygmomanometer, so using a blood pressure cuff at end range just to kind of measure force from side to side. So I really like the ASH test for shoulder end range strength and control, and we're actually in the process of getting our IRB right now to hopefully get some normative values on Circus Artist. So look for that coming in the future, fingers crossed. But because it's very, very end range, and because we can then test force development in those end ranges, I do really like that test because there's so little data on end range shoulder stability and control. So yeah, so I do look at that side to side, and just I'm also looking. Again, I'm really using my eyes. I was a circus artist. I was a circus instructor. I'm also have been a PT now for a good number of years. And those eyes do get trained. They do get honed, and you can see when those compensations kick in. And that takes training, but if you know what to look for, it goes a lot faster. So looking at how they're developing that force at end range, are they to develop force and push down or push back? Are they kind of disengaging the scapula from the trunk? Are they doing some rotation or some compensation where they're kind of shrugging up or pinching in the shoulder blade, either kind of pulling up to the ear, really upper trapezius dominant, or really cranking down to their side, locking down with the lats? Either way, they're not getting as much stability from the scapulothoracic musculature.
And so if you're looking at someone's, let's say you're just looking at range of motion, you're looking at strength, and let's say they're deficient in both. We'll just make this up. They're deficient in both, and they are doing trapeze, but they're still doing trapeze, right? So they're, even though they don't have the strength and range of motion, it's obviously coming from somewhere in order to allow them to do that. So we'll, I mean, it's kind of hard to watch someone on a trapeze because they're so far up, but is there, are there ways you can test that in a clinic?
Absolutely. Pull-up bars are magical. Yeah, pull-up bars are super, super great. And so is the artist as a resource, or your patient as a resource, and so is their phone. So all, not all, most circus artists that I know have a training buddy in their phone, and they will video a lot of their training, and that is a great place to start. So if you have an artist that walks in the door, there's a few things that I want you to ask them and think about. One is, okay, they're doing trapeze, but we can be more specific than that. When does it hurt you when you're doing trapeze, or does it hurt you when you're doing trapeze? If it doesn't hurt them when they're doing trapeze, we'll get to that in a second. But if it hurts them when they're doing trapeze, when does it hurt? And they can say, you know, when I'm at the back end of my beat. And it does not matter, Karen, that you do not know what that means. That's fine. You can say, hey, do you have a video of that? They do. It's fine. They love talking about what they do because they have all of this movement empowerment and movement positivity. They want to tell you about it. So if you have the time and you can ask them, they will show you the point in that video where it hurts. And it's using the back end of the beat as an example. It is very, very end range shoulder flexion. We may not know what the back end of a beat is, but we understand pendulums and physics, and we understand end range motion of the shoulder. And our clinical brain can start getting curious about, okay, what do I need to look at there? I need to look at what their shoulder flexion looks like. I probably want to look at them in hanging. And I want to see, do you have active range of motion that matches that relatively passive or active assisted range of motion that you're showing me in the beat? Right. So we can kind of, we don't have to be scared of this novel environment that our artists are working in. We can ask questions and we can get there. And if they don't have pain, but they are, when they're doing trapeze, that's fantastic. Because it's so end range and so novel, sometimes people move better in their circus life than they do in their daily life. I would say that's less common, but it is true. So then it's like, okay, it doesn't bother you there. Great. We may have to get there and gain your strength and work on that later, but let's fix the things that do hurt. Let's fix your daily life, and then we'll get there. And then the other thing to think about or touch on when you have somebody like that walk into the clinic is, how are we going to talk to them? Right? Like, they're doing trapeze. That's intimidating. How do I talk to you about that because we don't want to tell a mover to stop moving. That's not our role as clinicians, right? We want to keep our movers moving. So how do we keep them? How do we keep them moving? How do we inspire them to keep moving and feel safe doing it? One way is getting familiar with the vocabulary and helping them learn and to understand how the changes you're making in their daily life movements and that strength at end range is actually going to improve their performance. So you're kind of giving them that improv yes and. We're going to treat your pain and make you better at the thing you love to do. Nothing else is as powerful for buy-in for any athlete, for any performing artist than I'm going to make you better at that. Like you want your patients to buy into your plan of care. Like this is by balancing this out, we're going to make you stronger. It's going to make all those skills easier. We may have to take a step back to improve your fundamentals, but it's going to take you leaps and bounds forward on the other side.
And is there ever a time when you're like, okay, we need to like take a break for a couple of weeks? And of course, like if someone has like a broken bone or torn ligaments, like no brainer, right? You're not going to continue to keep going. But that aside, the obvious aside, are there other reasons that you may say to someone, okay, we're going to press pause?
Yeah, and that's going to usually be training mode issues. So unlike a lot of other sports where there are on and off seasons, unlike a lot of other sports where there's a lot of knowledge in the coaching world about training. So think about running, right? Like the couch to 5K, or we're doing a marathon training plan, right? Like we know that there's like a buildup and then a taper and you talk to many, many circus artists, and what you hear over and over again is I train the same thing every day all the time. And it's almost like, I want you to hit a reset button. And it's like, so it's not always, I'm going to pull the mat completely. Even then I'm going to say, all right, let's go way down to our fundamentals. Let's build back up. Cause usually what I'm finding with those folks is there's massive fatigue. There's not that recovery, and we need to get them back to a recovered state, find out where that homeostasis is before we can start building back up. So that's the one that's less obvious, but because of the lack of knowledge around training load, these are often folks that are newer movers, like I said, or they come from a world where it's dictated by the outside, more like our dancers or our gymnasts. They don't have that sense of how to modulate their own training. And they're also, you know, really, really in love with what they do, which is why it's so important to use it as a tool in the treatment process. But they really do love it. And so they're using it as their social outlet. They're using it as their physical outlet.
Right.
And sometimes it's helping them understand and learn how to balance it again to maximize their goals. It's like, hey, no, really, what are your goals? Because I've had to sit people down and be like, that goal's not going to happen with the amount you're training. You need to train less and you'll get there. And that's a hard conversation to have.
Yeah, because it's so counterintuitive to people, because in our society and in media, it's always the more you train, the better you get, versus, okay, maybe we don't have to train as much, but we can do very smart things and very precise and targeted things when you are training to make you better, versus put you into this cycle of an overuse, or whether it's a tendinopathy or, you know, aches and pains, maybe outside of a tendinopathy world.
Elbow tendinopathies are kind of big, because it's, you know, as we increase that load with gripping, that's true for our partner hand balancers, hand to hand, gripping each other, and gripping aerial silks, the trapeze. Right at that point where they're getting really excited, they go from training one day a week to training like 4 days a week. It's usually the same time they're also getting to the more interesting skills and gripping harder. And it's like, wait a second, we need to modulate that. So yes, tendinopathies are definitely a real thing in our world too.
Yeah. Too much too soon. Totally. And what about things like taping, bracing? Is that encouraged or not encouraged? And with the caveat that you're going to say it depends, but, you know, is it something that might be in your toolbox?
Yes, but yes, and right. So it depends. It depends on the culture in your local community, in your local circus studios, in your performers, in the company that they're a part of. So, some performers, some companies, all for it. Can you make it nude? Can you try to hide it a little bit? But I don't need to hide it from my peers. I don't need to hide it from the director. Other companies, they don't want to show it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to show weakness. They don't want to be the person that had to go get care because getting care is a sign of weakness, or getting care is a sign that something is wrong versus you're actually taking care of your body. Circus schools are kind of the same way. Just like, again, we see in the sports gymnastics, aesthetic sports in general, some studios, some schools are all for it. You go to your instructor and you say, "This feels weird on my body." And they say, "Okay, here's how you can change it, or go seek care. This is beyond my wheelhouse." In other schools, they go to their instructor and say, "This feels not okay on my body." And the instructor says, "It doesn't feel good on my body either. That's normal." And so there is a culture of circus hurts, or that circus is uncomfortable and that's normal or okay. But it's helping these folks understand that nuance of what delayed onset muscle soreness is, what's an injury, what's pressure and discomfort, what's pain and injury. And we come back to this idea that a lot of these people are newer learners. I think I probably said in the last podcast, it's one of my favorite phrases, adult onset circus, or adult onset aerial, right? We are newer movers, newer learners, or a lot of the folks are that I work with, and they may not have that knowledge, and they react to it in one of two ways. They either react to it by everything's an injury or nothing's an injury. And some of that is their personality, their history, their experience of pain, their emotional response to pain, and some of it is the culture and the school that they're working with. So it's kind of a nuanced answer. Taping, generally great. Bracing can be a question mark because does it get in the way? Does Velcro stick to the apparatus and damage it? Is the brace small enough I can train with it? Do I brace when I am not training, but not brace when I am training? Do I use tape and brace? So there are lots of different things to think about. Before you mentioned broken bones, I know plenty of hand balancers who, if they have a broken foot or a broken ankle, they've got a boot on one foot or a cast on one foot. They put a weight on the other side to balance it out. You can still train. Now you've got a little bit of extra weight to train with. Great, go for it. So there are ways, and that's one of the cool things about circus because it is adaptable. There's almost always a way to modify. So I'm going to challenge everyone who's listening to if you when not if when you're ne we're next working with a circus artist, I challenge you to ask them if you don't know, or reach out to their coach if you have a moment. And I know we're all very, very busy, and say, "Hey, these are the one, three, five things that I am worried about for this person." And some of our professional artists, you can talk to them directly. Even some of our recreational artists, you can say, "I don't want your arm going in this position," or "I don't want this kind of torque," or "I don't want you to feel that. Can you still train without that happening?" And chances are they're going to say, "Yeah, there's about like five or six things I can do." And then you have to check in with them. Really? Really, really? Are you going to be honest with yourself? You have that conversation because they do love what they're doing. But I challenge you to keep them training.
Yeah, and that's a good challenge. And I love the thought process around it's circus, it's supposed to hurt, so suck it up, which obviously, not something as a PT we like to hear. But then on the other end of the spectrum, oh, this hurt a little bit. I can't do anything. So that's where education comes in, like you just said, kind of educating that this is what it might feel like, or what it is, quote unquote, supposed to feel like, versus this is dangerous.
Yeah, when you've got something wrapped or tied around your ankles and you're hanging your body weight on it, it's not comfortable.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how uncomfortable that might be.
But your brain learns
Yeah,
that
you
it's
get
not
used to it.
threatening, and it's you're able to do more and more. So it's the same principles that we use every day in the clinic. It's just a little bit of a different application.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a circus twist on it.
Yeah. Pun intended. And so you had alluded earlier in our conversation about research. Where is the research around circus performers, circus injuries?
Yeah, so a lot has come out since we last chatted in 2020, 2021,
Sure.
somewhere in there, somewhere a couple of years ago. But a lot has changed, and not changed procedurally in the everyday world of a recreational artist, but changed in our publication and the amount of literature. If you want to go down the nerdy rabbit hole of searching the interwebs for articles, you'll notice that a lot of them have come out 2021, 2022, 2023 even. There's been a lot of new things coming out. So we've got a lot more data now on injuries, commonalities in circus. We have a bit more data on some circus norms. There's another paper in the works right now coming through by Stephanie Greenspan that was a multi-site study all around the US. I believe 10 sites in total over the course of 2 years. And she had different clinicians at each site kind of looking at these artists. We did intakes with them, taking them through an hour-long intake to get range of motion data, strength data, cardiovascular fitness data, some breathe testing. And so that's about to come out with those normative data as well. So like that's really cool.
Yeah,
We've
that's
got,
really cool.
yeah, we've got some little bits coming out from the recreational world as well. So we're starting to get more and more on what is circus normal. How is the range of motion different? How is their strength different? Is it different? We're starting to get a little more information about what the common injuries are and getting that nailed down a little bit better. Before that, our last conversation, most of that data was coming out of Cirque du Soleil because one, they have funding, and
Yep, they've
two,
got a lot of
they're
money.
obviously, yeah, right. I'm like, it's just like sports, right? Where's the money? That's where the research is. But it's in their interest to keep their artists performing. So they had and have research constantly going on their performers and with their performers to try to keep people healthy and moving. But those aren't the people that most of us are going to see in the clinic. Those are professional artists. They have different challenges on their body. One of the coolest, one of my favorite papers is written about the students at ENC, the National Circus School in Montreal. And the author, Melanie Stuckey, did a really great job of presenting the difference between circus and sport when it comes to injury. And I really like what she wrote. And basically, it's the idea of when you're talking about sport, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not her words, but when you're talking about sport, we're always talking about like leaving it all on the field, putting like
Give it all
stressing
you
the body to
got.
it, give it all you got, leave it all out there. Injury rates are higher on performance day or game day. Circus is the opposite. By the time you get to performance, all of that should be so dialed in that when things go wrong, they still go wrong, but it's going to be more your, kind of bigger injuries or more acute injuries versus the training injuries that don't get picked up as much in those kind of studies where we're studying a massive professional artist population. What she was studying was the students at ENC and their training process, and she saw spikes of injury after breaks and spikes of injury away from their shows. Now, there's also the idea of like, are they hiding injuries during the show? But I don't think that's what it is. It's more, we've knocked out all the skills. We've done the hard training. We know what we're doing. Now we're putting it all together, and that shouldn't be our hardest work. That should be making it look easy, which is different than our sports, right? We're trying to be so secure in the movement that it looks easy. And unfortunately, that doesn't always get translated down to a really recreational level. So they're all still trying to throw those skills in at the very end, right?
You're
Like
like,
they're running a
let's
marathon the day before the
muscling
marathon,
it through.
going back to that training load and understanding. So there's lots of opportunities for us to come in as clinicians and help with that education on that process.
Oh, that's so interesting. I'll definitely look for that paper. The author's name again, so in case
Melanie
everyone else,
Stuckey.
Stuckey.
As CKEY.
Ckey. Perfect. So we'll
And the
look for
other big papers are coming out from Greenspan. That's Stephanie Greenspan. And then there's a couple consensus statements on injury if you want to start tracking your circus injuries. There's also a, because the IOC came out with a consensus statement on injury and sport. And then a group of researchers got together and did a circus extension to that.
Nice. Nice. I was just going to ask you about the IOC. You beat me to it. I was going to ask if they have any data or reference to Circus. And they do.
And they did.
Perfect.
Yeah, they wrote, yeah,
Perfect.
that came out in, gosh, either end of 2022 or start of 2023.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right to me. Awesome. Well, now I know a big part of what you do, aside from working with your clients who are circus performers, is educating people like me and other healthcare professionals around the world. So I know that you have something coming up. So do you want to talk about that and let the listeners know what it's all about?
I would absolutely love to. So one of my passions and my goals is clearly this community. And the extension of that is as this community keeps growing so rapidly, they need help. They need clinicians who are willing to speak their language and have some understanding of how the body works when it's in these more extreme situations. So not the shoulder flexion to 160, but the shoulder flexion to 180, 190. What does that look like? How do we support it? And so I've developed an online training program. This will be year four. I've already had 9.5 groups come through it,
Awesome.
and this year it's kind of getting a revamp. So we've had almost 100 clinicians come through so far, and we're looking for more to help support these artists. Again, this is an amazing population to work with. They make you look good as a clinician. They're super fun to work with, and they'll fill your clinic as soon as you let them know that you're there. So
Right,
it's a great
right.
opportunity to love what you do and to have a really growing practice. These are folks that are always reaching out for folks that will not tell them to just stop, not tell them no. We'll really listen to them. And so come join me. Come join the clinical revolution that is circus medicine. We'll really talk about how to understand the body in these extreme ranges, how to get them back to training, how to get them back to doing the things they love, and how to do it efficiently without trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, sounds good to me. What's the name of the training program and when can people sign up?
Yeah, it's called Circus Fusion. It'll be open for enrollment starting in early May, and it'll start on May 19th.
Perfect. Perfect. And where can people find all of this information and more about you if they want to reach out to you, they have questions? Aside, we already gave away on Instagram, you're the circus doc, but where else can people find you?
Yeah, so the Circus Doc is certainly a great place to find me on most of the social channels. My website is thecircusdoc.com, and from there you can get to online courses and clinicians lists of other practitioners that work with circus artists. If you are one, please add yourself to that list. If you can't find the information on that, email me and I'll get you on there. But we want to make sure that we get access to as many artists as possible.
And I love that you have other practitioners on there who work with circus performers, because if you live in an area and this is an interest of yours, well, maybe you can reach out to that person. Maybe you can shadow them. Maybe you can ask them questions. You know, I find most clinicians are more than happy to help another clinician out. So don't be afraid to do that. That's what I'm saying to everyone listening. Go to the website, find a clinician in your area, and don't be shy.
Don't be shy. Reach out, ask questions. It's
Yeah.
really a wonderful group of clinicians and a community of patients as well.
Yeah, perfect. All right. So, rounding things out, I know I asked you this before, but now I guess I have to ask you it again. And knowing where you are now in your life and in your career, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Wow. It's so funny because I don't remember what I answered last time. I also can only imagine how much has changed since last time you asked me that question.
Yeah, it's been quite a world the last couple of years.
Trust yourself and keep going. I know it's kind of simple, but this year has been a really big year of realizing that things are happening and things are moving forward, and it seems like I feel like I'm still saying the same stuff, but I'm realizing that I'm not. And I have the like they're now like there's the next generation of clinicians, and not that I'm that old, or I don't think of myself as that old, but the cycle of new grads and new clinicians coming out, there's been so much change
Right.
and evolution in how we practice and what we practice and what we're talking about. So it's just keep going, find things that you're curious about. And keep moving forward.
I love it. I think that's great advice. And it's true. The last time you were here, like you said, it was probably 2020, 2021, maybe. So a lot of things have changed. You've gotten smarter, you've gotten more educated, right? Because we never stop learning as PTs.
Never stop learning.
So,
That curiosity is huge.
yeah. So, I mean, answers are going to vary, answers are going to be different. And today's episode with you is everything that I thought it would be. So much great information for clinicians and for, let's say, people out there who are thinking of trying some circus moves.
And if you're both, double bonus. Now you'll understand what your
Right.
patients are
That's
doing.
right. That's right. That's right. And again, something that I think of every time I look at these circus moves is, oh, my shoulders would never be able to take it. But like you said, everything's adaptable.
Everything's adaptable.
And
It's amazing.
you don't have to be a hero the first day.
Nope, you're pushing your limits where you are right now, not
Yeah.
that person's limits, but
Yeah.
your body's limits. Everything's adaptable. Everyone always asks me post-surgery, can I do X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, your body is highly adaptable. We can usually get there if you're willing to
Yeah.
take the time and take the baby steps.
Right. Exactly. Great way to finish the podcast, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on again. And it was so great seeing you in person a couple of weeks ago in Boston. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast to talk to you.
And everyone, thanks so much for listening. Have a great couple of weeks. Don't forget to look up and sign up for Emily's course and stay healthy, wealthy, and smart. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to leave us your questions and comments at podcast.healthywealthysmart.com.